Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
And good morning, good morning, good morning from Jerusalem. My name is Andrea Simintov, and you are listening to Pull Up a Chair. It's a beautiful morning in the most beautiful country on earth, in the most beautiful city on earth. And we have a lot to talk about today, a lot to share, a lot to take us into Shabbos and to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, our annual day of mourning, reckoning, cheshbon nefesh, soul searching. Okay. And as we say each year, let it be the last Tisha B'Av, the last Tisha B'Av that we ever have. Let Moshiach come, the Messiah come, and wipe all the pain and sadness from this world. So there's so much to talk about, and usually I'm pretty funny, but I came across some stuff that was not so funny this week, and we're going to talk about, this week is the anniversary, the actual anniversary of Natan Sharansky. Natan Sharansky, our greatest freedom fighter of modern history. He was imprisoned 40 years ago this week. I'd like to read you some of his quotes. I want to know what your thoughts are about a Christian doctor being fired because he's refusing to use transgender pronouns. And most important, we're going to talk not about the Parsha Devarim, but about Tisha B'Av. Why are we still mourning two temples that were destroyed that are almost impossible to envision? What the heck can it have to do with me today? We've got it all. We can find every other Jew on the internet. Why do I need to mourn? Why do I need to take off my shoes? Why do I need to fast? And does it tell us anything today? A lot to talk about, a lot to think about before Shabbos. And let's see, before we go off the air for our commercial breaks. Yeah, we're going to talk about Isaac Herzog, the new president of the Jewish Agency also. My name is Andrea Simintov. Pull up a chair. I'll see you on the other side.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Okay, we are back. We are on the air. Andrea Simintov in Jerusalem and Pull Up a Chair. So much to talk about. During the break, I was busy crossing out pages. So many things we want to talk about. 1 hour show, got to get to it. I need to bring you to modern heroism. Heroes are not only the Maccabees. Heroes are not only those who stood up against oppressors in some kind of Charlton Heston film from years ago. Natan Sharansky, Anatoly Sharansky, to my childhood memory, marching with my beloved father, may he rest in peace, taking us, the Iron Curtain was hanging heavy. Jews who wanted to practice Torah observance, Jews who wanted to learn Hebrew, Jews who wanted to connect to their God-given roots were humiliated, shamed, and indeed imprisoned. Look up, Google, listen to this show always with a pen in hand or an iPad or whatever those things are, and take notes. Look up Anatoly Borovich Sharansky, Natan Sharansky. 40 years ago today, this is what he wrote this week. 40 years ago today, I stood before three Soviet judges and said the following words. For 2,000 years, the Jewish people, my people, have been dispersed all over the world and seemingly deprived of any hope of returning. But still, each year, Jews have stubbornly said to each other, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. And today, when I am further than ever from my dream, from my people, and from my Avital, his wife, and when many difficult years of prisons and camps lie ahead of me, I say to my wife and to my people, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, and to the court, which has only to read a sentence that was prepared long ago. To you, I have nothing to say. As I stood trial in that Moscow courtroom, my wife Avital marched with thousands of Jews in Amsterdam and The Hague, London, and Paris. She heard of my final remarks and my sentencing as she landed in Washington, D.C. In the 8 years that followed, she went on marching, and the Jews of the world marched on with her. It is because of them that 8 years after that bleak July 14th in Moscow, I finally made it to Jerusalem and touched the Western Wall. Today, the Soviet Empire is gone, and the Jewish story, which it tried to repress, the story of those people who prayed to reach Jerusalem, lives on. And today, 40 years after my sentencing, my family is preparing to bring our seventh grandchild into Brito Shel Avraham Avinu, the covenant of our father Avraham and the Jewish story in Jerusalem. Avital and I thank all of you who marched with us and for us. May the Jewish people continue marching together from strength to strength. My friends, that is a message for you. It is a message to you. It is a message celebrating you. Who are the you? You are the me. You are the us. You are B'nai Yisrael, Am Yisrael. This week, as we sit on Motzi Shabbos, Saturday night, and we open up our Sefer Koheles, the Book of Lamentations, we will recreate, re-repair, re-stitch, reassemble the torn carpet of our people. We were glorious. We were glorious 40 years ago. We were glorious 30 years ago. We were glorious 3,000 years ago. And our glory is available to us. It is there only to be taken, only to be saying, I stand with my brothers and my sisters. Natan Sharansky, who just turned 70, he walks the streets of Holy Jerusalem. You could see him. You could see him pinching his fruit in the market. He picks very nice fruit. His wife, Avital, beautiful, his children, they're all living heroes in our time. If you think you need to see the Maccabees, come to Jerusalem, open your eyes, touch the shoulder of the old man on the bus next to you. Say hello to the woman pushing her stroller with her great-grandchildren. They are heroes. They have seen history, and they have tied their every lot with the Jewish people. All right, that is my celebration of Natan Sharansky. When I think that I live in the same city as him, I'm very excited. Okay, just a bit of humor. I'm going to toss in a little humor here because I'm supposed to be the funny lady. No joke, no joke. Came across my feed, and somebody sent me a new exercise. It's very sad because Google, they have all these algorithms, and they send you, so I have an ear itch, they send you these advertisements and notices based on what you are scouring the internet to look for. Well, I have to tell you, it is so humiliating. All I get is ad after ad about the keto diet, which I'm not interested in, hair supplies and wigs. It's part of my business. I get a lot on the Zodiac. Oh, am I ashamed? Oh, am I ashamed? And I get about the newest trends in exercise. I kid you not. I received a video about an exercise program called Napper Size. N like Nudnik. Napper Size. It's a fitness class where you sleep to burn calories. Okay, we all know the story of the little boy who screamed, "The emperor, he's naked!" And you see people testifying, oh yes, you know, starts with a 15-minute workout and a bend, and then you spend 45 minutes sleeping. They lower the temperature, soothing music. Basically, they stick you in like a something that replicates business class on an airplane, and they charge, oh boy, do they charge a lot of money. I love that. I wanted to share with you, Napper Size. Whoever I shared that information with sent me a note back, Dorit in particular. I'm so in. Okay. Last Thursday night after the show, I called my husband after the show and I said, we've got to do something. We've got to go out. We've become so boring. We don't go anywhere. We have to go out tonight. But I needed fruit. I needed vegetables. So we decided to go to the Shuk. It was a lot of fun. We went to the Shuk, the open air market, as old as Jerusalem. No, what am I saying? It's as old as Jerusalem, but not just modern Jerusalem, older. So we went to the Shuk, and of course, we're both on diets. And the Shuk, which used to just be fruits and vegetables and very inexpensive aluminum pans, now it's become like very El Trendo, really filled with hipsters, you know, people wearing very interesting color yarmulkes and ritual fringes and girls with dreadlocks. Very beautiful, very hip, very sexy crowd. And then you have Ronnie and Andrea coming, which kind of cap it off as, you know, the ultimate. Now we can all say how attractive everybody is. We come in. And we go to this fish and chips place, very, very popular. I scan the menu quickly, and it looks like kind of almost raw tuna with fries. And I say, okay, I'll get a coleslaw. And it comes out, and the tuna is still red inside, but it's deep fried. I'm telling you, an inch and a half of batter. Do you think I pulled the batter off? Not exactly. So I ate the batter. Ronnie ate all my fries. But that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is we had two beers each. We both drank two beers. I have finally found the secret. We have a concept in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, in Torah talk. It's called Dan Lechav Zchut, giving the other the benefit of the doubt. Achtut, brotherhood. Ahavas Yisrael, loving your fellow Jew in Israel. Two beers in the Shuk on a Thursday afternoon. Everybody was charming. I loved every tourist. I chatted with Japanese tourists from Australia. You can go work on that one. Everybody, people that annoyed me, banging shoulders, people who were fighting with me over prices. They were charming. They were cute. They were quaint. They were colorful. And we realized Thursday afternoons, if you want to find me, you'll find me just a little bit buzzed walking around the Shuk. We sober up to drive home. And that's where we're holding. All right. Racing, before we get to all our Torah Dick stuff, our very religious, heavy, life-inspiring stuff, I have begun to understand those who do not read newspapers, do not listen to the news. I made fun of them. I remember for years, I have some nieces and nephews from one family in particular. They knew nothing that was going on in the world. And oh, how we would mock them. What do you mean you don't know about? What do you mean? You have to know. Eretz Yisrael is ours. You have to know what's going on politically. You have to know what's going on with our neighbors. You have to know. You have to know. You have to know. No, you don't. I realized we are so being robbed because, yes, we have to know what to say to our children in crisis. We have to know what to say to a friend whose heart is broken or is in need of guidance. But I don't need Robert De Niro or Meryl Streep or Elon Musk or Donald Trump or certainly Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. I don't need any of these people guiding me. They're robbing me. They're robbing me of my grace. They're robbing me of my charm. And I'm seeing that I finally understand that when we open up the daily newspapers and we read the schmutz, when we read the crap, when we read about the sexual violations and the aberrant behavior, it is affecting us. We are flesh, we are blood, and more than anything, we are godly. And when we sit and let others manipulate our godliness in the name of some kind of moral high road, we are being robbed. And I have to tell you, when I hear of people going off of social media for the time being, I used to say, yeah, she must be being stalked. No, she must be yearning for cleansing. Andrea Simintov, I'll see you on the other side of the break.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
We're back. Okay, leaning in close to the mic. They send me poison pen letters all the time, these producers here. All right, so one of the producers actually just said something to me, very interesting, and I loved it. We're getting ready. We have this week's Torah portion is Dvarim, where Moshe is, he talks, it's his final, it's his swan song to the Jewish people, and we talk about speaking kindly. What was that? What was that saying? There was a, I don't know if it was Roosevelt. Someone said, walk quietly, but carry a big stick. And I don't know how many of you saw, I'm sure so many of you listeners, because generally I do preach to a choir, but we used to have this calendar, came out after 7/11 when the Twin Towers were destroyed. And it said, you know, what it looks like, what the calendar looks like in Israel. And then it said every single day of September, every day is September 11th here. We're always subject to the horrors. And the Arabs, the Arab community, the Arab population has a day on their calendar. It seems to come quite frequently. It's called the Nakba, the day of the destruction. And forgive me for being confused. They claim it's the day that they lost their land, the day that they were kicked out. They were never kicked out. And they just keep mourning and mourning and mourning and mourning. But what I find fascinating is not the mourning, but the lack of ability to pull yourself down, pull up your bootstraps. You want a day on the calendar? Don't make it your narrative. And I think about Jews. I think about righteous, gorgeous, holy Jews who are the children of those who were incinerated, children and grandchildren, not just by the Nazi war machine, by the period of destruction of both temples, by the Inquisition, by the pogroms in 1929, by the tearing apart of Jewish shtetls in Eastern Europe. They didn't disappear. We celebrate. We remember. Remembering is an obligation. And if you don't have the facts, make it your business. Grab the facts. Find the information. Know who you are. Access your birthright. But celebrate. Grow. Prosper. Don't make bitterness your narrative. Somebody sent me, I'm looking now at a photograph. I have no idea who these people are. It is absolutely beautiful. It's a picture of a newborn baby boy. He obviously was either just, actually, I think it's right prior to his bris. He's not screaming. He's lying there. The world looks very rosy. And he's lying on the lap. All I'm seeing is the picture of the baby and an arm of an elderly man holding him. The elderly man might be his grandfather, or it looks like even his great-grandfather. And the reason I say is because on the arm, the forearm of this elderly man holding this newborn, delicious, 8-day-old Jewish baby boy are faded, tattooed numbers. His number, his recorded number from the concentration camp. And what does this photograph tell me? We live. We defy. We prosper. We believe and we grab life with two fists. This is the Jewish way. Okay, watching the clock, I have so much to share. And our third segment, I'm going to be speaking like very, very fast, a little bit like Rosanna Dana. All right, before we finish up today, I must say this. What is Tisha B'Av? When I was growing up, Tisha B'Av was a joke. It really was a joke. We didn't know what it meant. And I would say, you know, you had to finish that food before Tisha B'Av. You know, I hope, I'm waiting for you to remember, when Tisha B'Av comes, I didn't know what it was, Tisha B'Av, but now I know. Now I know that it is our eternal memorial of all the tragedies that befell the Jewish people. So what is such a big deal about the temples? And again, I was thinking about this a little bit when during my drunken state in the shuk, forgive me. But sometimes I think to myself, doesn't sound like that much fun, the temples. I mean, am I going to get to read my daily horoscope? Are the newspapers going to come up? Will there still be MTV? What about Facebook? Where will Facebook be during the time of the temples? And then I realize I'm so far away. I am such a product. We are all such products of that which is not holy that it behooves us to take a look and think, what did it mean? What does exile mean? Now, there were two temples, and during the first temple, which was destroyed 70 years before the second, short period of life, a little bit more than half of a lifetime. All right, so during the first temple, there were three sins: idolatry, immorality, and bloodshed. And I beg you to listen to these words, listen to it, but yes, with an eye on who we are today. We're not talking about ancient history. We're talking about today, but it was indeed the time of the temple. But so, you know, I get it. Okay, idolatry. I'm not bowing down to, you know, Buddhist or Vishnu, you know, multi-armed idols. I'm not bringing food or little plates of rice to somebody who's going to provide me fertility. I'm not an idol worshiper. Am I? Hold that question, jot it down, think about it. Immorality? Okay, maybe before I became Torah observant, but like I've done tshuva, I've recovered from that. What immorality are we still involved in? Bloodshed? Off the charts. Not me. Not who I am. But is it? What are we ignoring? Okay, but those are the biggies. But the second temple? Everybody was involved in Torah study. Everybody was performing mitzvos, commandments, and they were doing all kinds of kind deeds. Why in the world would they have destroyed the second temple? We learned our lesson 70 years prior, didn't we? One reason. And one reason alone, my friends, let us fall to our knees, because it is us. It is called Sinat Chinam, baseless hatred. I hate. You ever see those Dr. Phil videos? I hate my mother. You ever see those, a girl slapping somebody? Step out of the club. I'll show you. Somebody, I scan the newspaper. Somebody hopes that somebody else dies on air. What are we talking about? Baseless hatred. It's the equivalent of the three sins. It tops it. It tops idolatry, immorality, and bloodshed. A generation that was benevolent and did kindness for one another. I mean, we're so good. Can we also be involved in baseless hatred? I keep translating the Hebrew to the English. Forgive me, I'm looking at all this Hebrew. Sadly, frighteningly, kindness and hatred can and do exist. I want you to just think of an example. We all have these people in our community. Maybe it's us. We do so much kindness. This person does so much kindness. He's involved himself in a host of marvelous, admirable endeavors. He's the picture of benevolence. Until somebody comes along and questions maybe the correctness of a certain approach in his chesed work, his work in making the world a better place. We all know that popular term. What is that term that all of the people use? Tikkun olam. Okay, improving the world. So criticism is the hardest thing. Criticism's a killer. And most of us do not like criticism. So rather than being appreciative of pointing out maybe a different direction of how they want to go, this man becomes offended and he's concerned because and he becomes concerned and even angry. They don't appreciate me. I'm going to curtail my efforts. Anger creeps in. Resentment creeps in. And this person who was once the epitome, the embodiment of kindness and compassion, he suddenly becomes a hater. You know, another example I found and I was thinking about is the person who becomes such a champion of chesed, of good deeds, and he becomes a real rock star in his community. And somebody else comes along with equal abilities, equal monies, equal connections. And the original guy, instead of embracing him and saying, great, let's do it together, suddenly he becomes very resentful. Something is now lacking in his motive and his intent and his outreach and the goodness. And he doesn't want to bestow it as much. But imagine becoming that kind of a person who just does kindness for the sake of heaven, just so that one Jew can help another Jew because God says it's good. How can we be guilty of negative feelings and old unwholesome motivations? This was the case before the destruction of the temple. It doesn't sound like a big deal. It's a very big deal. The biggest deal of all is not to get sloppy. You could sit and say, but how can I know? What does it matter? Isn't tzedakah, isn't charity that goes to the right place, isn't it the bottom line, giving the money, bringing the meal trays, giving the clothing, building a house, tiling a roof, isn't that the big deal? It's a big deal. But when somebody sits and says, this is a bigger mitzvah than that, and that is a bigger mitzvah. A mitzvah is a commandment. Remember, a mitzvah is not a good deed. We are commanded to be kind, commanded to give, commanded to have a good eye and a gentle mouth and a positive outlook. It's not a plus. It's not a bonus. It's not a bunch of food stamps. It's not something additional to the prize between door three. Honing the mitzvah, honing the good deed, honing the commandment is our life's work. To open up, to say, if I can give, you giving alongside of me is even better. If I can dream, you dreaming alongside of me is better. None of us have a monopoly on kindness. When we come back, let's talk more about the burning temples.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Shalom from the heartland of Israel. This is David Ha'ivri. Join me every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 o'clock Eastern, for A Hebrew in the Heartland on Israel News Talk Radio. Hear the news and views from the heartland of Israel every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time. Be there.
And we're back. Andrea Simonchov, pull up a chair. Our perky, upbeat Tisha B'Av show. Not. Okay. This segment is not going to be politically correct. If political correctness is your oxygen, turn down your computer now and go back onto Facebook. All right? Koheles, Ecclesiastes, the Book of Lamentations. Not a popular book. Every year I sit, I personally go to a reading that overlooks the walls of the old city near Yamin Moshe by the windmill. It's a very marvelous experience. I am at the age where I do not sit well on the floor. I bring my little plastic chair and my book and my flashlight, and in silence, hundreds and hundreds. And there are readings like this all around the city. There are readings like this all around the country. There are readings like this all around America and Europe and everywhere, where we recall the destruction of the temple. Why would we subject ourselves to that? Because Koheles is the story of failure. Who wants to be called a failure? Everyone wants to hear about success. If I don't get success from this website, I'm going to go to the next website and learn about success. Everyone wants to hear stories of hope. But if we hadn't failed, the story wouldn't have been written. So why put out a book that we have to reread each year about failure? Now, many of us remember, those of us who study, and if not, you're hearing it for the first time. There was a story where Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, he was walking with the other sages on Mount Zion, Hebrew, and all around him was utter desolation. Then they saw the foxes running in and out of the abandoned, burned temple and the courtyards, and the sages began weeping. I mean, all they had aspired to, obviously God had abandoned them. And Rabbi Akiva, in a way that today they would probably put him away, he began laughing. And they thought he's out of his mind. And they said, "Why are you laughing?" And he very simply responded, "All of the threats, all of the terrible things that were predicted by God in heaven, they came to pass. So if the threats came true, the promises also would come true." So what does this mean to us today? We have failed and we have to bear the consequence of our failures. This is what is already not politically correct. Nobody bears consequences today. But the fact that we even have a concept called failure means that there's the possibility of achieving success. One, remember I said in our last segment that both kindness and hatred can coexist? Success and failure are polar opposites. Success means that there's an expectation. Now, you can only talk about getting into Yale Medical School if you think that there's a possibility. Now, imagine for a minute that you live in some primitive African village in Tanzania on a lake and you actually carry your water. It would be preposterous. And like, say that you only have spoken language and not even written language. The idea that you could possibly go to Harvard Medical School is preposterous. The possibility generally does not exist. So this is nice. Okay, so I want to share with you. Imagine, and sadly, too many of us know this. We've heard these stories. You go to a doctor and he says to you, I got this idea, by the way, from Rebbetzin Tzipora Heller, who gave a shiur a few years ago, and these are the notes I took. So imagine that you're going to the doctor and he says, "Listen, you're stage 4, it's terminal. That's it. Looks bad." You go to many other medical professionals, you even go to Sloan Kettering, and they say, "Listen, we're confirming the news, we're gonna help you alleviate the pain. We're gonna try to give you some more qualitative time, but get your affairs in order." Now you're in the middle of all of this bleakness, and then another doctor comes along and says, whoa, wait a minute. "Yeah, but I'm looking at these tests a little bit differently. The numbers could mean this, and the x-rays could mean this. You don't have to die. You need a terrible, terrible surgery, radical. It might even deform you, but you're going to be okay." And the others look in and go, "Whoa, we agree." Now, the patient is not under the delusion that the surgery is going to be fun or pain-free, but they're hearing, "We're going to take out what's wrong and you're going to live." This is what Echa Lamentations is about. This is what surgery looks like. The reason the surgery is done is so that we can live and there is hope. Now, this is really sort of funny. Rebbetzin Heller raises this marvelous point. She says, you know, if God is going to choose a holy place between Yumi and the lamppost, why did he choose a city? Why did he choose Jerusalem? I told you I was at the Shuk last week. It was very nice, but I didn't like feel a lot of holiness. Two beers, I started to like see the little bit of holiness. But God sees people as holy. Remember, I've told you on previous shows that the halacha, the Torah law, religion dictates that when you see a bus coming by, you give the right of way to the bus. I don't know if that's in the traffic laws, but it is in Torah law. Why? A bus is inherently more spiritual. A bus is the house of more nefeshot, more souls. God sees people as beautiful. Most of us, me included, see people a little less appealing than a beautiful mountain stream. But Jerusalem was very, very populated, and people came far away every year. They struggled to make the pilgrimages to Jerusalem. Very big hardship. So let me see. This is very not politically correct. Oh, yeah. Why are we deciding? What God is saying to us with the destructions of the temple is, I have given you the blueprint for kindness. Why are you deciding? Today, we celebrate humanistic impulse, all-night raves, rewriting language so that no one is offended. We have gay parades. People celebrate their sexuality. People rewrite their genetics. And none of us are allowed to say, doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel accurate. Doesn't feel Torah. No, we skulk. We hide. We maybe whisper it, but we don't dare say it out loud. We allow humanism, what makes everyone else feel good, baby, take place of what we know. We were all born godly. We were all born religious. We were all born tethered to a holy God in heaven, and it's systematically taken away from us until all around us the temples burn. We weep. We weep. Let me just go down the notes because I'm nervous about time. There are things I need to share with you. The text says we wept at night. Tears will be on her cheeks. Her is Jerusalem. There is no one to comfort her. All of her friends have betrayed her and they became enemies. My friends, why weep at all? What good does crying do? Big girls don't cry. Men don't cry. Because crying evokes a sense of mourning, loss. It is okay to cry. Anger at God? Something else, although he can take it. But unless you're a fool, you can't look at having and not having and think that it's all the same thing. The problem is, when we think about the loss of the temple, we don't think we've lost anything, and we just move on. We have an exile mentality, a diaspora mentality. It's called galus. We are so broken that we're comparable. We're really comparable to that person. I keep going back to medical terminology. We're comparable to somebody who's brought into the ER and they're bleeding from every place on their body. The doctors don't even know where to start. I don't know where to plug it in first. So we look at one another, see at the other's brokenness, and so frightened of being connected, we avoid each other. We think it's catching. My mother-in-law, may she rest in peace, she remembers when she was diagnosed with cancer, she lived in a very primitive, and people would cross the street to go to the other side. We cry at night because crying serves a purpose, to feel the darkness. In the dark, things feel hopeless, and darkness should be used. Use it. Cry. Tears don't lie. Tears are real. I always told my children, feelings are accurate. What we do with our feelings, this is something else. All right. These are our days to look at each other and feel our exile. Understand that people in Sweden are shuttering up their doors because they're frightened of their neighbors. You know, we read in magazines, there's a lot of distraction around. We read all about vacations, decorating our homes, food, the new crazy. Everybody's a chef today. God has given so much to us materially. It's all a bracha, but whatever we have a tendency to want more and more. But more and more is pushing us away from the source of our wholeness. What about if we want more connectedness to one another, more spirituality, more rootedness. At the end of the day, Tisha B'Av is all about man and man. We have to know where to place our priorities. Friends, there is a reason that this comes in the season before the high holy days, the reason we enter the carefree days of summer. Somber reminders at what happens when we forget who we are, to what we're tethered, and what it means to be a light unto the nations. I wish all of you a Shabbat Shalom and a meaningful, unifying fast.
Did you ever want to join in on our shows and ask a question to our show host or their guests? Or maybe make a comment? Well, what are you waiting for? Join us in the Israel News Talk Radio chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us. Go now and try it out. It's the orange button on our homepage and pop-out player.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.